Expressing your love can look many different ways, and with the right jewelry gift from Blue Nile, it can truly sparkle. Blue Nile's collection of classic diamond jewelry makes for the kind of gift that speaks volumes without saying a single word. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, Blue Nile's diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems, too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Literally Gaysians.
Welcome to Literally Gaysians, a podcast where two gay Asian guys, aka Gaysians, get real about their feelings and literally Gaysian stuff. I'm your host, Chris.
And I'm your co-host, Bao. And it's just you and me again today, Chris.
Yeah, just us. I don't know. We want to have a little time for just us and not always a guest. We're not always going to be in that threesome.
You know, threesomes after a bad experience, you just want to go back to the basics. And that's what we're doing, going back to the basics. And we actually haven't talked live since our last recording, which was probably a month ago.
Yeah, and you've been away.
Yeah, but I'm back. But how are you? What's been up with you?
Oh, Lordy. So much has happened since the last time we've talked. I'm going to have to move. Looking for a new job. Everything's going on. And been traveling. I got COVID again last week. I think I rebounded. So I'm trying to fight off any long COVID. Yeah, just been busy and kind of was cooped up all week. So it was got cabin fever. So I'm happy to, I even went to the office. So it kind of felt nice for once to get out of the house.
Did you have any symptoms?
That's where I've been at. Hardly any. It's just like a light cough. But I was pretty asymptomatic. So I just tested just in case before going out. And I was like, oh, two pink lines. There we go. What about you? What have you been doing now that you're back?
Yeah, I got back last week, 7 days ago. And I don't know. I guess transitioning back to life in the U.S. I mean, I have spent that much time in Asia before when I used to work in Asia, but just spending that much time without working in Asia and living with my mom. So leaving, she was so sad. We were crying at the airport. But coming back here, I feel a little bit of a pressure to kind of think about what's next in my life again. And the new idea, the new shiny idea I'm romanticizing is maybe living in Asia or working in Asia, which sounds overwhelmingly scary, but also exciting at the same time. But did no research. I'm just basing this off of this romanticized version of what my life could be like. Yeah.
It's a passion.
Yeah. To make a change, you kind of have to romanticize the change a little bit. But once I start kind of doing some research, then I get kind of a little bit overwhelmed. So I'm just going to take it easy.
Oh, that's nice. And weren't you also in Hawaii?
I was. It was really nice to see my friends in Hawaii, but it rained the whole time. So we didn't do much of any other things we did. So we partied a bunch and went to my friend Lance Dances, or AKA drag name Molly Cocktails, drag show at Atlas. And Atlas is this new club/bar that just opened up, and it was kind of super fun. And then you know how like I was talking about these warehouse parties that happen in LA? You know how I went to Pegasus. There's a similar party that's queer friendly in Hawaii.
In Hawaii? Who knew?
Yeah, wow. It was like warehousey. The music was kind of the same. And I think I read somewhere that like the younger gay crowd prefers these types of like roving parties that kind of move around from venue to venue.
Was it a lot of visitors or like locals?
Locals.
Oh, that's better. Oh my God,
yeah,
that's so nice.
Like secret location. So I was like wondering, because I don't know if like SF has one of those, but I was surprised to see it in Hawaii, but I had an amazing time there. We haven't caught up in a while. So let's dig a little deeper into our favorite segment, Chris, which is the Be Real segment. It's time to be real. Part of every episode where we get just a little bit deeper about how we're really feeling about things. So let's be real. What's on your Gaysian heart, your Gaysian mind, Gaysian balls?
I guess I touched on it at first. And I guess the theme of it was like some moving. And I'm having this sense of insecurity, like housing insecurity, financial insecurity. And I talked about it with my therapist. And that's what we kind of came down to, why I feel so anxious lately, not feeling like I have like a stable place to live in. You know, San Francisco's prices started going back up. And
so what happened to you?
Yeah, the evil corporate housing that's not rent controlled tried to hike it up another couple of $100s. And, you know, I was really upset at first, but when I think about how shitty they've been and how when you came over that they harassed us when we were first recording this, that they harassed us and you paid them to let us through. I'm like, this is not a home.
Oh, the lobby. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm psyching myself up to be more excited for this move. And I'm hoping to like have a sense of home again. And that's how I'm like, that's where I'm feeling. Because I'm trying to put this like shitty feeling that I've had for the last few months about the lease ending and hoping that I can just go into this new rent controlled place in San Francisco. It's that San Francisco living.
Did you find a place yet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Moving just a few blocks away.
Rent controlled.
And
nice.
Rent controlled will be a little bigger, not that much cheaper, but I can have you over and not have to deal with like some crazy security people.
Yeah. Wow. I'm surprised that you're able to find a new rent controlled apartment in 2023 in San Francisco. Those are really hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
And second, that you were able to find a place so fast, because I remember how freaking long it took you to find the place that you're sitting in right now that you're leaving.
I know. And it all happened so quickly. I tried to ask for a rent reduction because everyone's being fired in San Francisco. Like tens of thousands of people have been laid off in just the past month. I don't know what they're thinking. They're trying to raise all their prices. So I have a lot of competition. But people didn't want to move to this place, according to the owners, because it's in the Tenderloin, which it's not really. And it's people consider it a sketchy area. But I grew up like in my teens and 20s going there all the time. So I don't think it'll be a big change for me. It'll be kind of going back home.
Yeah, well, let's just hope it's not haunted then.
No, I'll make best friends with them. It'll be great.
And when I just came back from Asia, my mom and all my family, they just talk about ghosts so freely because, you know, Asia is just very different. And my parents my family's Buddhist. Mm-hmm. And so my mom was telling me like, oh, you know what? I bought that house that I bought and moved out of the apartment that I lived in when I first moved to Vietnam, right? I'm like, no. She tells me this ghost story. It's like, oh yeah, one night I was sleeping at 2 a.m. and then like suddenly all the lights turned on and heard a knocking on my door and that I felt like there was a child who like pulled my bed sheets from my bed. And then after that, I looked around the apartment building and I realized there were all these like signs, like things that they were putting that she recognized as like what Vietnamese people do to like shy away the ghosts. But she did tell me ghosts can never really like do anything to you. They just kind of exist. So I'm so happy for your rent-controlled apartment, but I hope you don't have ghosts.
You know, I'm not like religious or anything, but I do get a little superstitious. But the way I think about it is that somebody through all of this time has died in all of these buildings. So there's plenty of ghosts. And just like you said, they're not here to bother me. They're just chilling, hanging around, watching me jerk off. And it's great. Good shit. Good for them. Good for them.
They're like, bitch, again? It's Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Get ready. 3 more hours later.
Yeah. You had one 15-minute break. And this is how you chose to use it. And nothing else got done. Yeah, they're just sitting there judging. I would be a judgy ghost too.
Yeah, it's in our genes. And Bao, what about you? Well, let's time for you to be real.
All right, so I am feeling kind of honestly uncomfortable and like pretty serious. I'm just, I don't know, maybe like thinking more broadly about my role as like a son and just our role as like a good son, like what the good son is. And that's because I think my dad is guilt tripping me a lot. I'm understanding what he's going through. Last week, so he has 2 best friends, and my dad is also 77. One best friend died during the pandemic, and that was kind of like a big kind of moment for both of us because I was close to that friend. His other friend, which I'm not as close to, died like 2 weeks ago. And then last week, my dad celebrated his 77th birthday, but the morning of that birthday, he had to go to like his best friend's funeral. And so me and my sister took him out to dinner, and he had just had this, like, you can tell like death was on his mind. And then he broke it to us that he has kind of like a health scare that could be cancer. It was just a lot to take in. And on my like second day back in California, he had just kept making all these comments like, thanks for coming to this birthday. Who knows? It could be my last. And just like, like dropping like guilt trippy things like that. Which makes me just kind of feel guilty because I just told you, like, I kind of want to move to Asia. This kind of makes me think about that very differently. I felt like I had, like, 6 months ago made this big decision to really, like, focus on me, but then maybe I won't get the chance to do that in the next few months. And I feel really selfish for being disappointed about that. Like, I wish, I feel as in my head, like, the ideal good son would be like, I don't care about any of that. This is all for you, Dad. I'm going to be the caretaker. I'll move in with you. Granted, nothing has really happened yet, but I just felt like disappointed in myself for not being selfless enough. So if I'm being real, I'm just really uncomfortable and disappointed in myself for really having these emotions that I'm kind of working through.
Oh, that's like a rough way to come back after spending so much time away in like this sort of grand getaway, and you were with your mom, and then to come back to have it kind of take a turn.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, again, so I think this segues really well into what we want to talk about today, and we'll get real about today, which is our parents.
Parents. It's almost like a trope for like Asian and to be bicultural and have like issues to deal with their parents, especially us at roughly our ages to deal mm-hmm. with aging parents.
It's such a trope of any Asian podcast. Like there's so much stuff about parents. Of course, it's the favorite trope for gay podcasts, you know, parents and a relationship with them. So as a Gaysian podcast, I feel like this is a perfect time to visit this topic, but maybe from the lens of our not only generation, but just that cultural lens that we have on our parents. Look, I think we're both, let's do a quick privilege check. I think we're really both lucky to have and still have both parents in our lives and to have both parents who have been there in our lives since the beginning. So I want to like call out that privilege. But what I really want to talk about and what we really want to get into here is just like maybe the changing nature of how our relationships to our parents are now that we're at this age and they're aging.
I think what's helpful sometimes is that even though we all know the topic, hearing someone else talk about their version of it and how they're going mm-hmm. through it, I find helpful because hearing sometimes about you, like, I feel like I got a lot to say after you just said that. it brings up ways that to rethink how I think about my parents. Okay. Let me just get into it. If that's okay.
Yeah. 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 So, and we're going to set the scene and just really describe our parents really quickly. So Chris, go first.
So my parents, They're both Chinese. They met here in San Francisco. My dad grew up partly in China and then Minnesota. So he is clearly a little bit more, I guess, Americanized, for lack of a better term. And my mom came here when she was a teenager, and they met at a restaurant. She was waiting tables and he was there eating in Chinatown. So kind of a romantic sort of story. And then many a years later, popped out a couple of kids. I am much further behind my siblings. So one of the things that I recently started to think about is my siblings have a very different relationship with my parents than I do. I know them in a completely different way. They were younger, trying to work, buy a home, do all those things, when by the time I came around, they were much more established. So I started to actually feel a little bad for my brother and sister, because they probably had to go through so much with new parents. And I didn't really interact with them as much as I thought. One of the things I was talking with my therapist literally yesterday was how I'm realizing I don't know them as well as I thought I did. And over the past several years, I started to find I don't really like my parents that much.
You can love people and not like them sometimes.
Yeah. And they're parents. And so, there's the distinction that family, you don't have to like them, but they're still your family. But then with all this language about having chosen family kind of makes more of a separation there, because my chosen family I'm more close to. My parents don't know what I do. They don't know much about me. I'm not even technically out to them. And, I know I'm a big promoter of Harvey Milk. Everyone should come out to their parents, but this is a little bit cultural. It's also a different time. Mm-hmm. They don't know any of these other things about me. I'm not sure if this is all that much different. And I don't really feel much guilt. But that's not to say I'm completely not out, because they've helped me build my first dress for drag, for Doncha. mom bought the 1,000 thank you bags and saw exactly what I made and knows that I dress up as a woman and go on stage. Mm-hmm. Yet she won't go to my show because she asked me, how long is it? I said, 3 hours. She's like, no, it's too long.
Yeah, there's that out and not out binary that I feel like. I mean, I'm out to my parents, but I totally understand why, if you're Asian, you wouldn't be. Maybe that's something of our generation, too.
Yeah. And I tried to figure out, is this an Asian cultural thing or just my specific relationship? And I find it weird where I don't feel like I have to, whereas there's always that story of even if the kid was kicked out, but they wish they could come out to their parents and all these other things. I don't long for it. And I'm happy that I don't, because I feel like I would be in a darker place. And like you said, the guilt, that's the thing I've been battling with, because I don't like them. What do I feel guilty about? It's a strange feeling. They built the guilt into us as we grew up. But then at the same time, we grew up in this very American individualistic culture where white kids move out of their house at 18. Their parents are almost kicking them out. And they don't have this relationship afterwards in some cases. And there's all those articles now of Zoomers who are cutting their parents off from them. And maybe that's not such a bad idea. I don't know.
Even though you don't like your parents, Chris, you still visit them a lot. So there's something there.
Like I said, it's that duality. It's, I don't like them. And my mom said something so rude. I went to go visit her on her birthday, and she said something so shitty. And I yelled at her. I was like, I'm not coming for Lunar New Year until you apologize. I lost that war and was over there on Lunar New Year's.
Oh,
and
God.
We just didn't talk about it. And, you know, so it, that guilt, it's still there. And I've been trying to like learn how to balance it. When do I give up a stupid or because they're old, they're not going to change. And that's yeah. okay. They've gone through so much in a different time and had to raise my like annoying ass. So I should give this to them.
Yeah. I feel that way about my parents. And so a little bit about my parents, they're both Vietnamese refugees. And they left Vietnam right after the war. Mm-hmm. The American war, as I like to call it, not the Vietnam war, the American yes. war. And met here in the States. They got married and then divorced. So they divorced when I was 18. So obviously they got divorced 5 years ago. Hello.
It's quite recent.
Yes. Cause you know, I'm 23. My mom is in her early 70s. My dad is in his late 70s. I am out to both of them. I would say they both know I'm gay. My mom, I actually like intentionally explicitly came out to. My dad, I just heard through my mom knows that I'm gay. And then like, after a while, he's just like, it's there and it's accepted, but we don't like mm-hmm. talk about it.
That's the Asian way.
It's the Asian way with my dad. And he's, you know, again, a 77-year-old Vietnamese man, immigrant. This for me feels like it's gone pretty far. And I'm sorry, but for me, the bar is kind of low for him. And he's exceeded it a lot. So I'm grateful for that. And I'd say my relationship to them is like, it comes in waves of like extreme closeness and extreme distance. And I think we were close growing up, but I think something changed when I came out. Something changed when I moved to San Francisco. Something changed in me. Something changed in them. And I felt like it's always kind of waved in that direction of like extreme closeness or extreme distance. So now like when I moved to LA and during the pandemic, I got super close to my dad, but like felt really like distant from my mom. Then I felt distant from mom for like quite a few years until I just visited her again. Now I feel super close with her because we spent a lot of great quality time together. And I think right now our relationship is in a period of transition in that like we all came out of the pandemic much older. My parents are thinking about their mortality a lot. They're wondering about my future now that like I'm almost 40. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what words to describe this except that it's in transition and it's quite uncomfortable. And I'm kind of just like letting the trusting the process.
Yeah. And I think that's something that has been also on my mind a lot, their mortality. Cause you know, we're of that age where our parents are losing their friends. And I do look at my mom and see how so many of her friends have passed away and she has to make new friends, but in the middle of a lockdown. And I think that's why I spend so much more time thinking about my friends and trying to maintain and grow those relationships because I see it as so important.
And I totally feel that. Like I told you, my dad's two best friends died in the span of like the last 2 years, 3 years. But in between that, I felt like when I lived with him, so I lived with him for a couple of months during the pandemic. He was going to a friend's funeral like every other week during the pandemic. Like when you think about how the pandemic impacted like my dad's age group, it was actually really sad. And like the grieving process kept restarting every few weeks for them. In thinking of their mortality, they have to think of us too. Yeah. And the time I do think it made my dad a much softer person, to be honest. Did it make your mom a softer person?
I feel like she got harder. Because I think it's hard on her. And so she depends on us as her like support. And we don't talk to her in the way that her friends would. Because we're all probably always badgering her to do something. Stop smoking. Do this. Do that. And that's not what she's looking for. But and so I try to keep that in mind. But I think she's taking it hard, but doesn't talk about it.
Yeah. How about your dad?
Oof, it's rough. He's in one of the reasons I think about my mortality a lot is because he had a stroke when I was very young, and he's had multiple strokes since then. And he's now immobile and living in a skilled nursing facility. And so, and it all happened during lockdown. So you can only imagine how stressful that was, finding a place. And he even had COVID, and we basically all said bye to each other a couple of years ago because he went to the emergency room, and it was, he was feeling cold, and he just started FaceTiming all of us. And so that was like a really rough time. But what was strange was in the moment, I wasn't feeling very emotional about it. And it's one of those weird things I always have had. Why don't I feel sad? But I always feel sad later on. I think I'm just good in crisis situations. And some people say that's a symptom of ADHD, just emotional like regulation and understanding emotions just takes me a different amount of time. And also as him as a guy, didn't have a lot of friends, and it sucks. And what few he did, you know, they didn't stay in touch. And so I see that how so many parents, where the men depend on their wives as their best friends. You look at it now, that's so unfair to all these wives.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you if people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else? Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Being the youngest child of like 10 years, I wasn't really taken care of by my parents as much. They were both working. Those are some of the things that I learned, you know, as I got older. This is what Chinese parents do. They don't say, I love you. Everyone knows that. They put food on the table, and that's their version of I love you. And I get that. But I always felt very kind of out of place at home. And I used to fantasize that I was maybe an alien put on this planet in human form to learn about Earth and their culture, or I thought I was adopted. And so, you know, this is all before like 23andMe and stuff. There were stories of like, you know, fake kids that I learned about, fake adoption papers and stuff that my grandfather had to do so he could bring people in. And like my dad has two birthdays because they like faked some stuff, or it was just like messed up by all of the paperwork, you know, of the time. And so I genuinely thought I'm somebody else's kid because they're nothing like me. And clearly I'm their parents. I look like my mother. I got the same saggy cheeks, and I got my dad's skin issues and all of that. And what's funny is that recently, like everyone knows, because that's all I talk about now, is that I think it's like a symptom of the ADHD, just feeling like an outsider and feeling like I can't connect when other people who are neurotypical are talking. And I think that's probably why I felt always on the outside. So, but it's funny because that symptom showed up as I'm totally not part of them. I'm not one of them. And I always wanted it. I actually sometimes still secretly fantasize that I was adopted or that so they don't have to like care for them.
Well, you know what? This explains, to me at least, why you love stories about the outsider, like Hedwig, Veneno, and that you love sci-fi so much. I'm just like, when you were telling me you thought you were an alien to come, I'm like, you've been watching, girl watches so much Third Rock from the Sun.
Totally.
Remember that show?
I totally identified with that. I mean, maybe that's why I do love sci-fi so much and all of those things. Wow, you pinned it on me before I even saw it. Hedwig, all of that.
Maybe that's why you're also like out loud. Like your drag isn't like trying to be fierce. Your drag isn't gorgeous.
I'm not the gorgeous one. I'm not the gorgeous one.
Let's just say your drag isn't gorgeous, but it's the loud, the comedy, the shock value, even the looks are always just something that you want to walk in a room and then everyone notices you. And I wonder if it was like, maybe because you felt so out of place at home.
Or I just couldn't read other people's emotions and didn't know that I was freaking them out.
You always freak people out in a good way.
Yes.
Aside from the people who serve you lawsuits.
Yeah. And then freaking Shenyun trying to sue us.
Some of the people who tried to sue you.
Yeah, but only over the last several years, even before the diagnosis, I learned to embrace it. And I learned to embrace it because all of my friends embraced it. And that was and I think that's why I feel so close to you and everyone else around us. Like, y'all accepted me and, you know, became my chosen family.
Oh. Sticking to this theme of the complicated relationships with our parents. What's like a complicated feeling that you have about your relationship to your parents that like you're always revisiting this? Like, what's that complicated feeling?
It's always this back and forth of like, oh, I owe so much to my parents and I should be doing this, that the guilty son feeling. And then sometimes I'm like, oh no, I don't owe them anything. And because they treated me poorly in this situation, and it's hard to like meld them together. Both can be true. They may not have treated me in a way that I wanted them to, but I can still also care for them and love them. Because they're your parents and they still did a lot for me. I cannot write off how much they did for me and my siblings. It was hard. Grew up not with a lot of money. They did what they needed to do to get us where I am now. I'm doing relatively well in the world. That's the part I will seesaw with. What do you go through with that?
To your point, it could be both. Both can exist at the same time, this feeling of like gratefulness and gratitude, and also like, you're driving me crazy. Or you're so problematic and toxic. I don't even know where to begin.
Try using those words to them.
I know. I saw this new like thing from New York Mag. They released this like whole issue, New York Magazine, on like the new rules. Like the new rules are about etiquette. And one of it's around like tipping. And I think we can agree, yes, when we go to a restaurant, we tip 20-25%. But then they had these other things in there, like at a coffee shop, 20%. When you do takeout, at least 15%. Okay, I don't know if I totally agree with it. But then I was just like, imagining telling my parents this. These are the new rules of tipping. And imagining just like my dad just like laughing in my face. Let's just be honest, Asian parents are freaking terrible at tipping.
My mom has taken money off of the tip plate that I put there multiple times.
Yes.
Without me looking.
And it's worse at when you're at an Asian restaurant.
Oh, that's like, terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got to help the people because those owners, they're probably doing wage theft anyways.
Give them more money to launder. In terms of my kind of complicated feeling, I would say that I'm going to talk about physical abuse. So if that's something that you don't want to listen to, or is not helpful for you to listen to, you can stop listening right now and turn this off, and we'll see you next week. My complicated feeling, let's just begin with like as a little kid in Vietnamese, they used to describe me as pha. So pha means like to break or mess up. Like that kid is so pha, like bao is so pha, which is basically meaning that I'm a super mischievous and boisterous kind of kid. And that's always breaking things. So like a handful.
Dennis the Menace.
Yes, Bao Viet the Menace. And my parents believed two things about me because I was so boisterous or mischievous, is that one, that means I will grow up to be evil, like a gangster. Then the second one was smart. So it's like smart and like successful, which absolutely makes no sense. But they were so afraid that I would be a gangster that they took to disciplining me like a lot and physically beating me so much, like compared to my sister. And so I have a complicated feeling about this. Because at the same time, I understand that they came from a different culture. They come from a different culture. And this is what they were taught on how to discipline children. But it's complicated to feel that because I've used that excuse for so long to suppress just like my real pain or experience from that time. I think I used to remember like, oh, my parents, they did beat me. They did discipline me physically. It was probably like only two times a year. And I think in this last year, going to therapy and working on some ideas that I have about myself, we touched upon this kind of landmine of like physical abuse. And I started to remember like, no, it was like probably two times a month. And we would be screaming. I would end up outside of the door. My sister would be so scared. And it was brutal. So like, I can kind of like have chills just like thinking about it. Cause like, you know, the body remembers, right? And I used to just think, all Asian families do this. So you're not alone. So it's just like, it's part of your culture and white people are just never going to understand it. And it's just part of our culture. And we just kind of like swallow it and look, we did turn out to be successful or something. Mm-hmm. And I used to think that until I met like all these like Asian American children or people like my age. I was like, yeah, my parents never touched me, dude. and I also just met a lot of Asian American kids who were like, yeah, they treated the boys like this or they were abusive like this. And even sharing this, I feel kind of like shameful. Or like,
why shameful?
I think Asian people listening to this, stop being so dramatic. Like, this is part of the Asian culture. That's all your parents knew. Don't be so hard on them. But I think about it, I'm like, if I saw that behavior with my kind of friends, with their children now, I would be completely mortified.
I guess I sort of see it as more generational because... You know, it was still wrong. When we think about it now, I think it was still wrong. It happened, and it happened across many cultures, even here. Like, mm-hmm. My siblings had corporal punishment in school. I happened to be born 10 years later when it was, I guess, outlawed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would pin it just on it being cultural. It's just... Yeah. And maybe just like, you know, them too, like their particular like relationship with you. Yeah. It's weird when you say that because the other thing I picked up from my dad was his anger issues. And, you know, there was a time when he nearly burned down our house because he was so mad at us. And so I feel you on like the scary, you know, abusive things that happened, but I just don't usually try to think about them very often.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to think about it. We were talking about something else about like something. Sometimes I feel like I need to be hard on myself or I can't, or else I'll turn out bad. It's much more complicated of a narrative than that. It took a while, but that's like the simple sentence. And like, breaking that down, I kind of remembered this. I'm like, oh, but my parents only disciplined me like twice a year. And then suddenly I started thinking about it. And suddenly it all came back to me like, no, dude, yeah. This was like twice a month. And then like I just like sat there bawling, realizing I had suppressed all that. Yeah.
Kind of pervasive through your mentality is like, as long as I've known you, you've been very hard on yourself just about everything. Like, got to be the best at that. Almost like some control issues around it. And yeah. But I also thought, oh, I kind of wish I had that to be able to, you know, become successful and all those things. I think I went the other way because I ran from those things. I tried not to be controlling. I just wanted to like hide and kind of disappear.
Yeah, that's what my sister did. She turned out to be the rebellious one. but it's funny. I saw this like this TikTok and it was a Stitch, like, stitch this and tell me your life story in a sentence. It's like, oh, the high achieving child grows up to be a burned out and highly anxious homosexual.
Yeah. It's so common. Like, we all tried harder because we were queer. So we had to like show everyone up, and then we expended all our energy. And now look at us. We're just like trying to scrape by with little therapy appointments as often as possible.
Yeah. And you know what also, I've learned this like maybe 10 years ago that I heard that if you got physically abused or like disciplined physically a lot as a child, that you're into like rougher sex as an adult.
All right.
Which also matches. Once in a while, like I was like, I would have the thought in the bedroom, like, oh, just, you're not going to ruin this for me too, parents. And so I just had to let go of the thought. But okay. So that's like my complicated feeling. It just feels obviously still really messy to me, and something I'm just, you know, trying to entangle a lot.
Wow. I this is a little bit of a cop out. I feel like my response, like of you having it like brought up, like, I think I have a complicated feeling, like the anger issues of mm-hmm. both my parents. And it sucks because I like will have friends who are so, it makes me so jealous, who had like such like loving relationships with their yes. families, are so well adjusted. And I went to a wedding of a cousin like this past year or two, and my aunts and uncles on my dad's side are stayed in Minnesota. They have white husbands, and so the family is more what most people would say is Americanized. And they're playing board games. They're laughing with each other, telling jokes. They know like funny things about each other. I'm like, oh my God, is this what I could have had? And I hate, that's a complicated feeling where I want what they had, but I don't want to discount what my parents did for me. They my dad is the oldest out of all of them. So he had a different relationship with his family and came to the U.S. At a much older age. So he just has a different understanding of the world. So it really, sometimes when I see like friends who had great relationships, oh yeah, a little jealous, but seeing how close it could have been was very surreal to me in a way.
You know, like I have a bit of jealousy with some of my straight friends. It's a reason for like their parents to reconnect and for them to get to know their parents in a different way. There's like a natural like transition point in life for them to like transition their relationship to something different and focus on maybe mm-hmm. a grandchild. And for me, I don't know, it's just, it's, you know, when you meet all these people, like my dad is my best friend. My mom is my best friend. I call her every other day. I text her about everything.
Oh, I also, that sounds awful.
It sounds awful. What do you talk about? It's funny that we've spent like almost 40 or 40 years ish of our lives with them, and then we're still longing for that.
Yeah.
That kind of connection that we're frankly never had and like probably never will.
The way I've like found myself like tackling that like particular thing about kids is that there are plenty of straight people who aren't having kids. And I think there's that similar feeling. Like, mm-hmm. I don't always want to pin it on my queerness. I just pin it on, I'm just bad at relationships. it's still my issue, but not mm-hmm. a queer issue.
I don't want to make this a whole, like one of those gay or Asian podcasts where we just spend the entire time dissing our parents, even though I think we've spent some good time talking about the
most
nuance.
Of it dissing our parents, and we most have plenty future ones to diss our parents.
Yeah, they're always going to come up, which is and we spend plenty of time in our therapy sessions with our therapists dissing our parents. But I do want to get into some of the things that we appreciate. So what do you appreciate the most about your parents?
They put up with me. They're really, as the louder, as they say, black sheep of the family, they really put up with me. And also because my siblings are much older than me, they kind of were done with parenting in a way. That's how I thought about it in my head. In high school, when I was coming out, I was staying out till past midnight when I was 15, 16 years old, hanging out with my new queer friends that they didn't know. And they did not question it. And I found it very surprising, but very welcome. I don't know if it's necessarily something they did, but they were too exhausted to do anything about. Like, my sister brought me up. She went to my parent-teacher meeting. She signed all the forms. You know, I wasn't a bad kid. I just happened to need my friendships outside of high school, where I eventually came out. But my friends were all the queer friends I met at, like, the queer youth groups. And so I'm happy that they kind of left me alone, because I know that they were very hard on my brother and sister. I definitely found my sister's diary one day and read about how hard it was.
Oh.
She doesn't until she listens to this. But I read her diary. I know what she did.
And when you were younger? Or when you were younger, you read her diary, or recently?
Mm-hmm. I went through her room and I found a book with a little lock on it. I'm like, oh my God, this is it.
So obvious.
This is gold.
People need to literally just unlock my phone and just go to my notes app and it's all there. But sometimes I'm like, am I really writing a diary, or am I just writing things down in case I go missing? They find the phone and can maybe figure out what happened. And when they do a documentary on me, they can get someone to read it. As for me, what I appreciate most about my parents, their journey about me being out to them, I am just in awe of just how they've progressed. Again, for my dad, the bar was pretty low. We didn't talk for several years, actually, in my 20s. But I do think when I moved back in with him during the pandemic, just for some company, we really got to rebuild our relationship. So I'm super grateful of that. My mom, I think she was accepting, kind of, to my face when I came out to her when I was 19. But I found out later she was distraught by it because she's blamed herself. That she, you know, at that time she didn't know much about the queer community, so she thought she did something wrong, like she raised me in some way wrong. And she thought that, and it was a different time in the mid-2000s, that being gay was a kiss of death. Mm-hmm. That it was dangerous for me outside in the world because of all these other things, or because of what people would think of me. And, you know, fast forward to this, something that happened when I was in Asia. She took me to this like dinner with her, like she's in a band and they're so cute. They're like all like 70. And the literal translation of the band is like just waiting to die, which is hilarious to me. Anyway, they're like the coolest 80-year-olds ever, like chain smoking and playing guitars. And they were like renowned like musicians. And then one of the bandmates called my mom after. It's like, hey, I have a single daughter. Would your son want to meet her? Be interested in meeting her? And then she just tells him, you know what? There's this new term I realize for LGBT or queer. It's something like with the number 3 in it. I won't butcher it. But she used that term. I had to look it up. And she was saying, this is not my life. It's his. I want him to be happy. It's not something that's my fault. It's what he was born with. And this is what's going to make him happy. So you're my close friend. And whenever anyone asks, I'll just tell you the truth. But that's the truth. And I love my son. But I don't think he's going to like be interested in your daughter that way. And just hearing that from her was just meant a lot.
That's crazy. That's great.
Yeah. And you know, she didn't tell me to my face. She was telling someone on the phone right next to me. I'm like, this is her way of kind of telling me in a way. But then she used to use these two kind of terms. I think if you're Vietnamese American, you know, the term bidet, which is also like, that's how they used to call gay people. I don't know why. Uh-huh. And then my mom used to use hebe, like he's afflicted. Or like he's sick with it.
Yeah. I felt like a lot of the troubles is like there was no language around it. And I remember there was this one video from like the Queer Asian Days called There's No Name for This that, you know, interviewed all these people because there was no positive or neutral term. There's like this Cantonese term that's awful, something like to low fall, people who jump off of the roof.
Oh, that's terrible.
So there's, I think as just time passed and people learned new words and just like the world changed, it made it easier. And I'm happy about that. And I'm glad that worked out for your mom in that sense, to not have a negative word, to have like a, I guess, a positive phrase to use to describe it.
And I think that's new. And that's probably only something she would know living in Vietnam. I think the term like loosely translates to non-binary or queer. And how we understand is queer, but not the word queer, right? It's like, it's basically like third level, like a third level. So it's not like a binary, like a third level. And so I appreciate that that exists in Vietnam. And I really appreciate like my 71-year-old mom, like you had to use it.
Both our parents are getting older. What are you most scared of for them?
What I'm most scared of is that they'll both feel alone when they die. Sorry, I'm going there.
Oh, I hear you.
Yeah. Because my parents are divorced. My dad has a girlfriend, My mom's all the way in Vietnam. I can't guarantee I'm going to be there. Thinking about not being able to control that, like my family all in one city and in case in the future something happens, I can count on myself being there. I have this deep fear and I have a dream about it a lot. Like, and probably driven by my guilt of like, I'm not being a good enough son, and that like when it matters in that like last breath, I'm not going to be a good son. And they're going to think that. They're going to be disappointed in something. I don't think that's a healthy thing for me to think. So I'll say that. I'm trying to work through it. But that if you're asking me like to be real about what I'm most scared of, it's that. Like they live just such hard lives. They've been through war. They've seen so much death during the war. And then they've re-experienced a bunch of death during the pandemic and being re-traumatized by it. I just hope that at this age they found, you know, they're starting to find peace and that like it'll be peaceful for them when the day they leave us. And I think about that too much, about their eventual death. I think my sister is more like, let's not think about any of that. I mean, again, she's a firefighter. She sees a lot of this, but I do kind of revisit this topic or this idea quite often every week. So I think it's just the nature of just how old they're getting and how much they themselves are talking about their own deaths.
Yeah. I think I have a similar situation where I didn't move away actually. And it's one of the things that I wish I had done. And one of the reasons was that I thought I needed to be there for them. And I go back and forth thinking, oh God, why didn't I do this? Why wasn't I more selfish? They were fine for the past, like, you know, like 10, 15 years. But I think having so many health problems in our family, it made me think that it was going to be a lot worse earlier on. And that's why I think I'm always thinking about my mortality, because those health issues are coming through to me and my genes. And I think one of the reasons that I started partying so hard with you all like a decade ago was, well, if I have to stick around, let's just make it fun. This is my way of disconnecting from it. And not the only thing. It was also genuinely fun. I wasn't fully escaping something. Mm-hmm. And so I think about where they're at, and it's kind of like, not about them being alone, but they're having not like a great golden years. I think I worry about suffering because you know, it's a lot of pain. My dad is not mobile. He can't take care of himself, when that was like his biggest thing, that he could take care of himself. And he was very independent. And I know that when he wasn't able to drive anymore, that was like a hit. And I think he's depressed. And I think that's what I'm scared of most, that they're depressed in their older age. And I don't really think there's anything I can do about it. Like, as much as I can be there, that's not going to solve it, because we drive each other crazy. Me being physically there isn't actually making things that much better. Maybe a tiny bit spending time, but they're not going to improve their mental health or happiness by very much anytime soon.
What are we going to do? Find them like a therapist who speaks that language, who understands what they're going through, and who can actually get them to be vulnerable and tell their feelings to not a family member.
And sometimes I give up on that. But then a social worker called my mom, and she said that she talked to them like about her problems, and she felt a little bit better. So it was like a little therapy thing. And sometimes those little tinges of things make me hopeful. Mm-hmm. And I had started looking for a Cantonese speaking psychiatrist, because I know that my mom's anxiety is because she has undiagnosed ADHD. I am not a licensed psychiatrist, but she has it. And I think it definitely has made life harder for her, but she won't have the language to speak about it. And so those are some of the little things I try to do, because I'm so scared of her having an unhappy older age. I still keep trying to fix her, which may or may not work out in the end, but I guess I'll still keep trying.
Yeah. And I think we're kind of in that same boat again. That we seem to always end up of, like, I think when you see your parents at this age, and you know, in certain ways our parents are separated from each other, and they own, you know, we're kind of the last like we're the one last line they have to close family, but they've also lived through a life of trauma. They kind of don't know what to do with their time. They don't know what to do with themselves. They don't know what to do with their thoughts. And sometimes I just say, like, maybe showing up is enough. So I think, as I personally believe that, but I do have the same questions you have. What's something's changing right now. Something's transitioning right now. I don't know what it is, but I kind of want to start figuring it out.
Yeah. I mean, doing the same that they did for us in that sort of Asian way, don't need to say, I love you. Just put some food on the table. So showing up, get their lift somewhere, just make sure that they can get through their day. That may be just enough. That's what they do instead of saying, I love you.
Yeah. Bring them food, but food that they would find delicious and cheap.
Yes.
Even if you bring them nice food, they're going to be, how much did that cost you? That's terrible. That's so expensive. This tastes terrible for how, like, you know, so just save your own sanity by bringing them the food they like. I've tried the thing where I try to bring them like the nice food or bring them to the nice restaurant, but no, it doesn't work. I did the mistake of bringing my dad to freaking Slanted Door in San Francisco. He did not think there was a bigger crime committed to the Vietnamese people, and he's been through two wars. So
I agree with him. Slanted Door, $14 banh mi, that is bullshit.
I can't. I can't have that, but I can definitely have a drink after this conversation.
Girl, we're both gonna need it.
But you know what? I really appreciate this time with you, because again, I've known you for over a decade. Just to hear you just explain just everything that you've been feeling, everything your parents are going through, and how similar it is to mine. Like, I'm just really super grateful for that.
Yeah, it goes back to what I was saying earlier, that hearing someone else talk about theirs, even though you might generally know, like getting down to those specifics, they were both surprising, and I felt very connected to them. And I just hope that other people do too, because how often do we just bring that up in conversation when we're out? It's like, that's the downer conversation, but I'm glad we did talk about it today.
Yeah. And then, you know, if any of y'all have thoughts on this topic, again, DM us, kind of share with us what you're thinking, or, you know, again, I want to check our privilege. We have two parents who are there for most of our lives and are still alive. And I know a lot of people have grieved the loss of their own parents. And so I know that we totally recognize that privilege. And then with that, we're going to wrap it up. As always, you can follow us at Literally Gaysians on Instagram and TikTok. So the TikTok's new. And me on Insta at Bow Bow Bowser. Where can they follow you, Chris?
Find me on the Insta at meetmesouthofmarket.gif with a soft G.
And come back for our next episode. Another episode with another guest, another special friend. So look out for that in a couple weeks.
Thanks, everyone. Till next time.
Bye.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.